Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. To mark Baby Loss Awareness Week, this episode is brought to you in partnership with Tommy's Charity, who fund research into preventing miscarriage, stillbirth and premature birth. Sadly, baby loss is something that affects one in four of us, so the work Tommy's do is absolutely vital, as is learning to break the taboo and have honest conversations about baby loss in spite of the fact that it can make us feel sad and uncomfortable. Today I am joined by two people who I'm honoured to have featured on Mother of All lists before. I am a huge fan of both of your work and your social media presence because I guess in essence it's a lot of what I try and do as well, which is about being really honest. Elle Wright is a blogger and a fundraiser, and you have a hugely popular Instagram account, and it's both a space for interior inspiration, a bit of pug love in the form of gorgeous Boris. But more importantly, her Instagram is a space to share her story since the death of her son, Teddy. Her book, Ask Me His Name, is brilliant. It's an emotional and frank account of what it feels like to be in the storm of baby loss. And she is joined by Jenny Ag, author of The Uterus Monologues and journalist. And your work has been published literally everywhere. Grazia, Marie Claire, Huffington Post, Daily Mail, Red Magazine. To begin things and to remind you, first of all, that this podcast is called Honestly, so it's all about being honest. I like to start with a quick fire round.
Oh, goodness.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh, God, like naught. No, very, very uncool.
I mean, you could give yourself more than a naught.
Two.
Elle?
I'd probably sit around the bottom somewhere as well, like 2 or 3. I actually infamously said to my husband on our first date when I turned up late, not intentionally late, and he was sitting there waiting for me. He'd been waiting quite a long time. I said hello to him because I didn't know him that well. And the next thing I said was, I didn't do this to try and be cool. I'm not cool. And then he gave me a hug and said, yeah, I can see that. I was like, oh my God.
So being not cool is kind of your thing.
Yeah, it is.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how nice are you?
Ooh, I think I'm quite nice. I hope I'm quite nice. It's quick fire, isn't it?
That's fine.
Seven?
I'd probably go mid-range because I can go either way. I'd probably say I'm a 5 or 6 because, like, when I'm nice, I'm really nice. But when I'm being, yeah.
Oh, I want to know what star sign you are. I'm going to ask you in a minute. On a scale of 1 to 10, how strong are you?
I can beat my husband in an arm wrestle.
That's good. haven't arm wrestled in years.
I don't know. Like 5.
Are we talking physical strength or emotional strength?
That's for you
or
to interpret.
Okay. Physical strength, probably a 1. But I'd say emotional strength, only because of what we have had to endure in the last few years. I'd say I back myself as a strong 9.
Good. Own it. You're strong women. Night owl or early bird?
Night owl.
Oh, yeah. Dog or cat person?
Well, I don't actually think I'm either. I have 3 cats. And they are quite, a feature of my Instagram. I love them dearly, but I really, really want a dog as well. But that's controversial, isn't it, to be both?
No.
Believe it or not, I'd say I was both. I have a dog and a cat.
And you couldn't choose.
And I had a real scare with our cat last week. He was really poorly, like he nearly died. And actually, although he is the most ungrateful bastard on the face
of... I don't even know the name.
Moses, but we just call him Mo. We've had him for 8 years. Your cat's just, they're aloof, aren't they? Well, he's aloof and he doesn't care. And actually, I've always said, joked to people, oh, he's my first cat, he'll be my last. But when he nearly died, I was in tears. And I was like, no, Mo, don't leave me, it's not your time. So yeah, I'm 50-50. I'm just an animal person, I'm an every animal person.
Okay,
same.
All right.
Same.
Oh, getting honest about cats. Okay, introvert or extrovert?
Introvert.
I would probably have said I was an extrovert, but in recent years, I kind of swing between one to the other. I'm an introverted extrovert now, I'd say.
I'm nodding because that's what I think I am. What star sign are you?
Virgo.
You.
Taurus.
Are you? Mm. I thought you were going to say Gemini with your switching around.
No.
I wonder. I could go deeply into the star sign thing, but I'm not going to. When did you last weigh yourself?
About a year ago. I don't weigh myself now. I gave it up.
Yeah, same here.
Same. I don't weigh myself.
So good, isn't it? When did you last go to the dentist?
Oh no, this is going to be really shaming. I haven't been to the dentist for ages because I left my job and I used to go to the dentist near my work, and now I'm moving, so I haven't registered with a dentist.
That's all right.
Like
there's no judgment.
No judgment here, Jenny.
Oh, I feel judged.
And maybe this will be the conversation that...
Don't look at my teeth.
I think I was there in April or May.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're doing well.
All right.
Have you ever wet yourself as an adult?
I came very close on my niece's trampoline the other week. Yeah. So I hadn't been on a trampoline since I'd given birth. And I don't know, I guess in my head, my pelvic floor was still fully intact. And I was good to go. And obviously going on a trampoline as a 34-year-old woman doesn't come up as often as you might hope it would. And I was in my sister-in-law's back garden and I was trying to show off to my niece. Down she goes, and literally in that moment I was like, I have nearly pissed my pants. What is going on?
Are you wearing a dress?
No, I had jeans on, okay, and luckily like a pair of big knickers. Yeah. So it was just and then I was like bouncing really slowly. And then my niece starts going, Auntie Elle, do it again. I was like, no, Auntie Elle's had enough now. And I saw my sister-in-law's face and she was laughing her head off at me because she knows she's had two children. I was like, what the hell just happened?
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. And she's like, now you know why I don't go on there.
Yeah.
No, naive.
How did you do in your GCSEs and has it impacted your life?
Oh, I was a mega nerd at school, so I did pretty well in my GCSEs. And apart from the fact that it meant I got to go to university, I think it's made no difference at all to my life.
How about you, Elle?
I came out with GCSEs like A's, A stars, a few B's. I didn't go to university. But I do think that probably having a keen interest in English and English literature, because those were always my best subjects, have helped me because...
Yeah, that's where you are.
That's what I do now.
You wrote a book.
Right. I never thought I would use it to write a book. So, yeah, I guess it did.
Yeah. Where are you happiest?
In my garden with a book.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
On the beach in Cornwall. Oh, yeah. Every time.
Yeah. We both got a shared love of that area of Cornwall. What are you most afraid of?
Oh, like on a silly level, I'm really scared of snakes. Like, can't even watch them on TV. Is it bringing everything down if I say never having children?
No,
that's
it's not bringing
probably
it down.
That's my biggest fear right now.
Silly level, I have an irrational fear of birds. Pigeons in particular.
But guys, I really don't think it is irrational. Birds and snakes are both...
They are...
Sketchy creatures.
Fucking terrifying.
I've done a whole episode on phobia and they're very common.
On a serious level, I guess one of my kind of deepest seated fears since Teddy died is that people will like stop talking about him and forget him, which I guess, you know, life moves so quickly and everyone sort of moves on, don't they? And there's lots of stuff happening. So that's why I keep talking about him, because it's like, I just want to keep them in the present, if that makes sense.
Which I'm going to pick up on that in a minute. Biggest regret?
I don't really believe in regrets per se. But I do sometimes think about how when I was younger, I was not a very good friend to people who were grieving. And I would behave very differently now.
Mm. That's such a good one, and it's so true.
How much younger are you talking though?
Well, like in my early 20s, I had a couple of friends who lost a parent or a sibling. And I mean, it's that age, isn't it? You're very kind of wrapped up in yourself. Yeah. But I do look back and think, shit I was.
No. I guess I'm a bit like Jenny. I don't really believe in regrets. And I think I tend to not really think too much about the past and how I could correct it. I try to sort of more focus on how I can correct that going forward, whatever twist that gave, and what I can learn from it. So I can't really off the top of my head think of a regret. And I know there are probably things in there I shouldn't have done or could have done better.
Yeah. But that's the whole point, you know. If I don't particularly love the person I was in my 20s and quite a lot of my behaviour, but that is exactly the point, isn't it?
Yeah,
I remember on one of those those like camera programs in schools, Educating Essex, and the teacher just saying, you know, we get cross with kids for misbehaving, but that's exactly the point. You're meant to learn. All the mistakes I made in my 20s were exactly what stood me in good stead to not make them at later points in my life. Three words your friends would use to describe you.
Organised. I'm always the one that organises things. I hope they'd say I was loyal. Yeah,
dedicated.
Yeah.
I hope they'd say I'm funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
They're good. They're three good ones.
They're really good ones. Probably control freak. I know that's two words, but yeah. I'm like at home, I have to have everything a certain
coping
way.
Strategy, isn't it?
Total coping strategy, but it's just got worse. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they'd say funny. They might say joker, because I am that person that's always like tries to make a joke out of like inappropriate situations.
Yeah.
And then I hope that they'd say that I was like happy, because I always try to be that person that like jollies the situation along. And I hope that when I am like happy, that it kind of radiates onto other people when they're feeling a bit shit.
I really love the idea of a happy, funny control freak. I've been through a lot of therapy about my own control freak tendencies. And she's like, you need to let yourself off the hook for it, because although sometimes it can be damaging and too much, it also stands you in very good stead in a lot of situations. So be kind to yourself about that. There you go.
A little bit of free therapy there, thank you.
But it's true, isn't it? You know.
It's so true.
Yeah. So, on to the big topic. That was just meant to be a little intro, and we've gone quite deep, but that's fine. And it is going to, you know, we can't keep joking, because we've got a very serious subject to talk about. We are here to talk about baby loss, and if you're listening to this, you'll already know that this episode is sponsored by Tommy's, the baby charity, and they estimate that baby loss is something that will affect one in four of us. And actually, when I was at the awards a few weeks ago, they said that that probably isn't even representative, because so many people don't report particularly miscarriages, so it could be far more than that. So let's say one in three. That is just about everyone, because if it isn't you, it's someone close to you, it's a colleague, it's a sister. So let's crack on and learn a little bit more about these ladies. Elle, as I said to you off mic, I read your book in 4 days. I loved it. And I love it when you are lucky enough to know the author a bit. It's like you're reading it to you. So you're in my ear all the time, which is really nice. And you can hear all your tone of voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was brilliant. But what really struck me is, I think in the intro, quite early on, you talked about the fact that you wanted to kind of reach outside of the echo chamber of the baby loss community. Because, of course, yes, you'd pick up your book if you'd sadly lost a baby, but it's to try and make the much wider audience understand. And I definitely felt that. I'm lucky enough not to have lost a baby, although I've, you know, got close friends and relatives who have, but I still found it such a powerful read. But for those who don't know your story, could you tell us a little bit more about you and Nico and Boris and, of course, Teddy?
Yeah, so I am 34, live in Surrey with my husband Nico, and we had our son Teddy in May 2016. He was a natural pregnancy, so we tried about 10 months to have him, which felt like a lifetime, but I now know I was incredibly, incredibly lucky to have fallen pregnant so quickly. And I had a brilliant pregnancy, but when Teddy was born after an induced labour because of leaking waters, he wasn't breathing. But we were told not to worry, and they sort of gave him some oxygen, gave him a rub down with a towel, and gave him back to us. And he seemed fine. He hadn't opened his eyes and he wasn't crying, but they said that was quite normal after an induced labour for him to be quiet. And then in the night after Teddy was born, he stopped breathing altogether and was taken away by a midwife.
Yeah, and that you had dozed off, hadn't you?
Yeah, because we'd been in since the Sunday night. I'd been induced on the Sunday night. Teddy wasn't born until the Monday evening. I'd not slept, obviously, all through this. I'd been awake for like 38 hours by this point. Luckily, Nico stayed because he didn't want to go, because Teddy had only been born early evening, didn't want to leave me. But yeah, he stopped breathing in the night, and it was like a horrible scene from like Casualty or ER, where they start pulling curtains around and there are lights flashing.
But so you're going through this trauma, but you're kind of on the back foot already, because you're exhausted and being woken up. We've all been woken up in shocking situations. Yeah. Your adrenaline goes.
Yeah. And I did not have a clue what was going on. And I just remember, and that I can literally close my eyes and replay it, like most of us can with anything that's really affected us and traumatic. And Teddy's little arms just flopped down by his side and she ran off with him. And we found out that he'd stopped breathing and he'd been resuscitated for 18 minutes, but they don't know how long before they found him he hadn't been breathing. And I just remember the consultant that came to speak to us, sort of, we were in a room on our own, a quiet room with a box of tissues on the table. So I thought, you know, this is terrible news. And he crouched down in front of me to eye level and he just said, "You have a really sick little boy." And all I remember thinking was, he's not dead. He's not dead. Yeah. And that was all I hung on to. He was transferred to a neonatal unit the next morning at a neighbouring hospital. So that's a neonatal intensive care unit, which not every hospital has. So he was in a skaboo at our hospital, our local hospital, which is special care. But when a baby's really sick, then they need to go to basically an intensive care unit, but for babies. So he got taken there and he lived there for 3 days while they ran every test on him. He was wired up to all kinds of machines and we couldn't really touch him or hug him or do any of the normal things that you do when you've just had a baby. And they told us, so 3 days later, that they would have to withdraw his life support because he had no brain activity. They think potentially from oxygen starvation because he hadn't been awake for such a long time, and they very kindly let us hold him while they withdrew his life support. So that was how he
died. Is that a norm or is that with the...
Well, I think we were lucky that the room that was for sort of bereaved parents or where perhaps somebody who was delivering a stillborn baby would be, we were in there. And so they said, rather than just withdraw his life support in the neonatal unit surrounded by, you know, other babies in tanks. I assume that that could be a thing, yeah. But I said to them, would it be all right if we took him in his tank, took him to the room that we're in? My parents were there, my husband's parents were there, and some other family. And would it be okay if we took all the wires off him and
just had
him? And they said, yeah, that's fine. We can like hand pump oxygen into him and hand him to you that way. And that for me just felt, I don't know. I think in that moment, you're just kind of clutching at straws and you think, what can I do as a mother? Yeah. Like, this is my moment to do the right thing. You don't know what the right thing is because your head's all over the place. But I guess I just wanted to, for all of us to try and think really clearly in that moment so that I could do something that would be something that I could look back on and have a nice memory rather than a terrifying memory. Yeah, so I'm glad we were able to do that.
And it's remarkable. It speaks volumes about you that you had that clarity of thought at that point.
I think it's adrenaline. Like you were saying earlier that, you know, adrenaline kicks in and you think, right, what the heck can I do right now to correct this? And you can't correct it because you're in free fall, but you do the little things that you can do to make it better. After that, obviously we went home without Teddy and it was kind of like this new chapter, this new life started. And about 9 months after Teddy died, after I'd shared a bit on Instagram through sort of posts, kind of decided I would start writing a bit more about him and about what happens and about that sort of narrative of parenting a child who isn't here. And it snowballed.
Yeah. Turned into quite a big thing. There was so much of your book that stood out for me, but there is a couple of things that really hit home with me. And one is that really weird human instinct to try and empathise and try and act like you know. And you know, you say quite clearly in the book, there is nothing really compared to losing a baby. But people go, oh, you know, I had this really bad thing happen.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so bizarre that we do that. And I think it's that trying to rationalise, isn't it? And you're trying to put yourself in someone's shoes. But actually, for you, like, it's like, don't try and make this okay. This is the worst imaginable thing. And I think it's just a really important reminder to say that to people.
It's human instinct, isn't it? We want to try and fix it for somebody. We want to try and fix it. We want to make it better and we want to say the right thing. And actually, I think it's just all of us taking a step back and realising it can't be fixed. It's the unfixable.
Yeah, which is, I guess, everyone's brain short circuits, isn't it?
I always say it's like when the happiest event becomes the saddest. Everyone's pumped, aren't they? Like your friends, your family, people you work with, everyone's excited. And then becomes the complete opposite, becomes the unthinkable. And I think that's when our brains can't cope. And so then we just say anything. And I totally get it. I totally get why people try and say, oh, me too, because of this. But it's cool. Like, you don't have to fix it.
No.
You don't. And I think as bereaved parents or people who've experienced any kind of loss, if we just say, look, it's okay, you know, it's, don't try and fix this for me. I don't want you to understand how this feels because it's really horrible.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone to.
Why would I?
Yeah. And you become really well practiced. And I'm sure Jenny will agree with this. When you go through a trauma like that and people say, how are you? Once you're kind of going through it and you really well practiced at kind of, I just did the same sound bites of saying the same thing that would sort of pacify them and let me just carry on so that I didn't have to think about it too much.
Yeah, I think that's really, I'm a little bit reluctant to kind of completely, our experiences are very different. I think you're right, you do kind of become very practiced in finding things to say that almost absolve other people. It lets them kind of go on, they've done their bit, they've asked you, they've checked in. And it's really lovely that people want to do that, but at the same time, it's like, it puts more work. It's more work.
Yeah, it's exhausting. It's more work.
It is exhausting. Yeah, kind of because you have to be convincing. You have to convince people that you're fine and that you're in a healthy place because and that you're moving on or moving
other
forward.
Other than
or
a few certain people, people don't want the real answer.
No.
Yeah.
Parents are often left even more devastated after the loss of a baby because there are simply not enough answers out there as to why it happens and therefore how it can be prevented. Tommy's work is about hope, about finding the answers to prevent pregnancy complications and baby loss, as well as supporting families with subsequent pregnancies. The more I learn about what they do, the more humbled I am. Jenny, could you just give a little bit about your story and why you started the Uterus Monologues?
Yeah, sure. Me and my husband Dan started trying for a family about 3 years ago now, and it took us a little while to get pregnant in the first place. It didn't, not very long in the grand scheme of things. And then we had a miscarriage 2 days before our 12-week scan, and I was completely, completely unprepared for it. I just hadn't entered my sphere of consciousness that that might be something that happened to me. I didn't think I knew anyone it had happened to. At that point, we were probably about 50-50 split. Yeah. Kind of half the people, our friends had children, half didn't. That balance is slowly tipped. And then unfortunately from there, we've gone on to have three more miscarriages, all before the 12-week mark. And three were in the space of about 9 months. Oh. And we've gone through testing and we are one of quite a lot of couples who just are told that there's not really anything, there's no obvious reason, there's nothing they can treat particularly, it just seems to be bad luck. And I started writing really because I didn't know what else to do. I mean, I am a writer, that's what I do for work. And initially I wrote about that first miscarriage for the newspaper that I worked at the time. But that was kind of really how most people I knew found out. Which is, I don't know if that's a bit of a weird move, really, kind of keeping this thing secret and then, oh, here's my story in a national newspaper.
I really relate to that. It's sometimes easier to have that conversation into the void than to have it sitting next to.
Yeah, it certainly felt that way, actually.
You feel like you blanket cover everyone who might ever ask.
Yeah.
And then you think, I don't have to have that awkward conversation because they know.
That sounds weird, but I did that.
Yeah, because how do you do it on social? Yeah.
And then from there, I think because of course, when you have a miscarriage, because it is, unfortunately, it is very common, I think there is this kind of idea that, well, it's just a blip, you know, I mean, it's very sad, but it'll be over quickly. At least you can get pregnant. It's a sort of annoying thing that everyone
I love that
says
one.
To you. Oh, it's great.
That's one of my personal faves.
And then I was very lucky. I did get pregnant again very quickly. And then when we lost that baby as well, something started to shift in my mind that this wasn't over. This wasn't sort of something we'd moved past really quickly. This was something else and this was more complicated. I didn't know that story. I didn't know anybody who'd had multiple miscarriages. Wasn't kind of a conversation that I heard around me particularly.
Are you offered any kind of counselling or
I wasn't. I know some people are. I think it's really hit and miss.
Yeah, postcode lottery, probably.
Depending on where you are. You know, the research shows that PTSD is really common and not just in the kind of immediate few weeks. You know, this is something that's happening kind of a year down the line.
And I think, you know, any kind of trauma, particularly surrounding pregnancy and birth, we are all naturally replay it in our head. As much as you want to shut that in a box, if that's what you want to do, and not have to rethink about that moment that hurt so badly again, it will, if you bury it, it will come back. It will come back for you. So you may as well just accept it and talk about it. And
have you, either of you, had like therapy beyond your own therapy through writing?
I started seeing a therapist this year, actually, because I had a miscarriage after IVF at the beginning of the year, and I think I reached my saturation point of
coping,
my capacity of shit that I was able to deal with on my own. And I remember saying to my husband, still sitting there in floods and floods of tears after I'd been into hospital for the final time, and saying to him, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. I've tried everything. I've tried to, you know, carry on, be that happy person and use all these other coping mechanisms. And it's like, I'm reaching into this toolbox of stuff that I can use, and my toolbox is empty, and it just keeps coming at me. And I was like, I need to talk to someone. And he was like, you know, you talk to everyone. And I was like, no, I need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And it was just happened to be the following week I was seeing my acupuncturist, and I was in this little holistic place that I go. And as I was waiting, I normally don't sit down because she always runs on time, but she was running a bit late, and there was a card of a lady who does, you know, one-to-one counselling and psychotherapy. And I just picked it up and put it in my bag. And then it took me a couple of weeks, but I called her. And yeah, that was my 34th birthday present to myself, a therapist. About time. But I was, like Jenny said, were you offered anything? Even losing a baby at full term,
I
walked out of hospital with a bundle of leaflets.
Just unthinkable.
I mean, and who can, and I know in your book, but at the time you kind of, it's the last, you know, bunch of paper, you don't want it.
I don't want to read anything.
And then at the time that perhaps you can begin to process and think, oh, that would be useful, it's long gone, isn't it?
Yeah, I've chucked it in the bin or recycling, and then I think, oh God, that I guess would be, I don't really give out advice because I'm just a grieving mum, but I would say to anyone leaving hospital who does get given a lot of paper or sent a lot of stuff in the post, just put it in a box somewhere, put it
shove
away.
It,
just don't chuck it, and maybe go back to it because you don't know when you're going to need it.
Mm. I guess continuing on the mental health thing is the other myriad of emotions you feel, which is like jealousy and envy, which is really hard when you are presented. It's so bizarre because I was coming to speak to you guys, my eyes were open and just seeing a pregnant woman, and that, it's just everywhere, isn't it? And it can be when you least expect it, you know, that feeling like that sucker punch is going to happen, whether that be on social or in real life. And it's, none of us enjoy feeling envy and jealousy because they're not comfortable emotions, but it's absolutely can't be helped, can it? And that must be hard to live with those feelings.
I went through the first sort of few months, like jealousy was almost the hardest thing for me.
Yeah.
Which just felt like, and it's because you don't know at that point. I mean, I now know that I know loads of people who've had miscarriages or struggled to get pregnant, or, you know, all kinds of stories that I now know were out there. You just feel like everybody else is getting pregnant really easily, bringing home their babies, moving on to their second child, you know, while you're still struggling to get out of the starting blocks. And it, I mean, envy is the natural emotion, isn't it? And, you know, they're sort of mixed in with feeling left out, and are all your friends with children going to forget about you? And that's, you know, that's all difficult to navigate.
I found envy is then coupled with guilt.
Because
I feel envious of that person. Oh my God, I shouldn't feel like that. I'm a terrible human.
Circle of doom.
And then I'm like, I don't know where to go with this. You know, and I can joke about it because, you know, I have had those dark feelings of, I feel really envious of that. And I wish it would, you know, sometimes you just wish you could wave a magic wand and magic it totally in a totally different way for yourself and for your friends.
Yes, because you're not wishing it that they don't have it.
Just wishing it for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
You wish that everyone could have it. And I think that's where the jealousy becomes quite complex and multi-layered because you're feeling bad already, and then you feel jealous, and then you feel bad for feeling jealous, and it's just like goes around in circles.
But Jenny, I read something, I don't know where I read it, on one of my many bits of stalking you, but where you reframed it for yourself, and it was brilliant, about you, of course, when you hear other pregnancy announcements, you do feel that pang, but try and see it as a proof that it can happen rather than envy that you haven't got it.
Yeah, I do try and do that, actually. And I think it does really help if people are... It's happening more and more, I think. I mean, there were a couple of some celebrity pregnancy announcements this week, and actually both came with a...
Oh, yeah, somebody put something on Instagram.
Anne Hathaway. And she posted a picture of her, you know, her with her baby bump, and kind of said, for anyone who's struggled, I see you, I've been there. And actually... I mean, it's quite a brave thing to do, particularly when you're that high profile, but it's, that does help a little bit.
We don't know what journey anyone's been on. In fact, that's the premise of everything that I do, of Mother of All This, and honestly, is that you can be sitting on a tube carriage and, mark my words, everyone will have a remarkable story. Yeah, you know, everyone has been through hard stuff, and actually, it's going to come to it in a minute, but you can't put scales of grief as well, you know, because you were saying, oh, well, I don't compare to you. But, you know, everybody's grief is valid in whatever form, isn't it?
And the outcome is still the same. Yeah, we've both lost children. It doesn't matter how pregnant anybody is, or whether, you know, they lose a baby when they're in hospital, or, you know, 5 years down the line or 18 years down the line, when you lose a part of you.
So this is an amazing conversation between us, but I always like to ask the people of the internet as well to get their insight, which actually is something I do before every podcast. But with this one, I found it the most difficult because as I put out the first one, I had a couple of people DM me. In fact, I want to say her name because she ended up being like my little editor for me, Jenny Watling, who really, really helped me because I was trying to get the language right, because I asked if they ever had baby loss and people were saying, is that a stillborn? Is it miscarriage? And my whole point is that I was trying to keep it blanket. Because
Open it up to everyone, yeah. I think what it is as well, particularly when it's medicalised in hospital, it becomes, well, which box do I fit into? Have I had a miscarriage? Have I got an ectopic pregnancy? Has my baby been stillborn? Neonatal death? Sudden infant death? Like, which slot do I fit into? And I think we then feel like that's our narrative, and that's the...
Yeah, that's who... Yeah.
And so that's going to be totally different to how somebody... But as I said, I guess I come from it from quite the unfortunate perspective that I've lost Teddy at full term, I lost a pregnancy at 15 weeks, and I lost a pregnancy early on at 8 weeks, which turned out to be a twin pregnancy as well. So it's just, you know, and I think that, for me, having been through so many different things, it's all encompassed, it's all... together. And that's why I think Tommy's, with the work that they do, and, you know, a couple of years ago they did the We Need to Talk About Baby Loss campaign, which was really powerful. Yeah. Last year we did the Together for Change campaign, which Jenny did a brilliant piece with myself and a few others in a national newspaper, and it was across all types of loss. The message was, we are stronger together. If we all talk about this together, we don't get that sliding scale of, well, it happens so often we don't talk about it, or it happens too rarely we don't talk about it. No, we just talk about it and we'll just be normal.
Decided?
Yeah. who makes the rules?
Yeah. So I asked my followers, have you experienced baby loss? And 40% had. So that, I mean, that's huge, isn't it?
Speaks for itself.
Yeah, it says, I asked if it was an early loss, did you tell family and friends? And 25% didn't. I asked them if there's anything they wish they'd known, and the tidal wave answer, which, you know, usually when I ask these things, you get a variety, but nearly everyone just said that they wish they'd known. It was so common.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is the main thing we can do. A lot of people said they'd wish they'd known how physically painful it was and the reality of the blood loss, which, I think, again, with all women's health post-labour as well, we're not in touch with that amount. No one talks about it. Yeah.
No.
And it's shocking.
There was more in the pregnancy pamphlets I was given on flying long haul while pregnant than what to do if you have a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Which is bonkers, isn't it? I mean, really. I think there's a lot of damage done by people not being prepared.
Yeah.
And it's that shock and that trauma.
And I asked people then if they could be honest about baby loss, what would they say? Which was super powerful. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of responses. And these were some of them. That it is fucking shit, but that being told it is common doesn't help. And I think the answer is that you want to know that it is common, but you don't want to be have your experience devalued.
Of course.
And say that, everyone's been through it. I think that's the line, isn't it?
I think it's often used as a dismissive thing, it's really common.
I think
it's
it like depends cold, the you know, language that we use and how it's... Sometimes I think you can misinterpret written text. Whereas if I were to sit with you and say... Do you know what? This happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's completely different.
And I'm not devaluing what's happened to you. I think it depends.
Yeah, that is where the spoken word, the tone of voice, that it can make you feel inadequate, which I thought was a piece of language I hadn't really thought about, but I could understand. That it's very hard to see friends post-baby loss, which is something you both mentioned. That it hurts for siblings too, which again was something that had never, ever crossed my mind, that if you have baby loss when you've already got children... And actually, my mum lost a baby when I was 6, and doing this whole thing has brought back a whole load of kind of fuzzy memories that I didn't really think I had, but you can pull them out. And that I wondered where the space was for children whose parents had lost the baby.
Yeah.
And then I asked my audience, any questions you wish you could ask? Someone said, when does miscarriage become baby loss? And we've already covered this, really. We could do it by dates, but do we need to put things in categories?
I don't think you do. I think it's really difficult. I mean, I know I found that really hard, knowing whether my experience counted. And also, if you talk about baby loss with an early pregnancy, are people going to misinterpret your position on women's reproductive rights? Or
it's a whole other conversation.
I don't think we need to draw those lines.
And I think
it's unhelpful.
We end up drawing them because, again, in medical terms, you know, you go into hospital, you are an early miscarriage, you are a late miscarriage, now this is a stillbirth. You know, it's kind of like we're doing it week by week by week.
Well, and you spend a lot of time, I think it then means people spend a lot of time thinking, what's happening to me isn't a big deal. I need to, you know, people go through worse, they have it much worse. That's, you know, and it,
yeah,
it's
so... Yeah.
And then a question that I think is important to ask, how do you ensure it doesn't ruin your relationship? And both of you, I mean, Nico's passage in your book is amazing, and I absolutely love how much you celebrate your marriage, and Dan on your feed. Marriage is a complicated beast in itself, but how on earth do you navigate this as a... I mean, it's a difficult question, because you navigate it because you have to navigate it, I'm sure, but... How has it impacted your relationships?
Personally, I think it's made us stronger. And I know that I'm very lucky to be able to say that, because there is a lot of fear, I think, around, you know, there are some scary statistics out there about what losing a baby at any stage can do to a relationship.
For us, and obviously I can only go on our own personal experience of how losing Teddy kind of drove us more down the same path, if that made sense.
I
think, don't read statistics for one. Jenny and I are both coming at this from an incredibly fortunate position that we are both fortunate, white, middle class women in marriages. There are so many people out there who are not in that privileged and fortunate situation.
Really,
and I think our story is only one story.
It is a privilege, actually. I think that's a really, really good word to use about it. Because actually, I do think there is this idea with baby loss that it's only something that happens to married couples who don't have children yet.
Yeah.
And actually, as you were saying, the truth is so much bigger than that.
It doesn't discriminate. And that's what I think I've learned from meeting so many different people from so many extreme walks of life. It can happen to any of us.
Yeah.
And I think it really brings people together when they start to talk. And I just hope that by us kind of cracking the surface of it from our perspective, that it encourages everybody, regardless of their circumstances, to be able to talk as well.
Yes.
I do try not to like wrap everything up in a, you know, it was all for the best kind of
thing,
because that's not what I'm saying at all.
Yeah.
But it is that, you know, there are positives. There are things that maybe you stop and think about that you wouldn't have done before, and things that, you know, you learn, I don't know, whether it's how to be there for a friend or... And they don't feel like very much as consolation when you're in the thick of it. They really don't. I remember interviewing a psychologist about that just after my my first miscarriage, and she was giving me these examples of ways that people find to reframe their experience, and I thought, that sounds rubbish. What
yeah, and actually, maybe that's I don't want to reframe it.
I don't want to reframe it. I, you know, that's not, I want my baby. But actually, you do find those things. They are only small things, but I think you do find them.
And you find ways of, like, I've found ways of sort of parenting Teddy. Like, one of my ways of parenting him is through fundraising.
Yeah.
Because he can't physically be here. I guess it goes back a bit to what you were saying at the beginning about asking us if we had any regrets.
Yeah.
Do I wish every single day that Teddy was here? Absolutely, I do. But if somebody said to me, okay, you can have not had him, or you can have had him and lost him, had him and lost him every single time. Because that's your life, isn't it? And you own it, and that's like the journey that you go on, without sounding too sort of cliche. And then that kind of shapes where you're going and how it you become as a human, and hopefully you're able to support other people going through it.
And there's a great line, Elle, you have in your book that I now can't remember, which, like, grief doesn't last forever, but
love does.
Yeah.
And that was actually something that a vicar, I'm not religious particularly at all, but I didn't know what to do about a baby's funeral, and the vicar came to our house, and he didn't sort of get kind of all high church evangelical or do anything like that. He just said, I'm just going to say to you, you know, I know this feels awful. I'm a father, I'm a grandfather. And that was how he spoke to me, as a father and a grandfather. And he said, and I promise you, you feel awful in this moment, and I don't want you to underestimate how awful you feel, but, you know, grief doesn't last forever and love does. And he said it again at Teddy's funeral, and I was like, he's so right. And actually, it's one thing. I had to put it in my book because I really think that a sentence like that can help so many people.
Yeah, something to ladder back to
when it feels desperate.
Yeah, exactly, when it's the most dark thing.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a good place to end, although I always do three things before the actual end. Thank you, ladies, first of all. But in case people don't already follow you, can you let them know where to find you on social media? And also, if you have anything particularly you want to shout about.
You can find me at Feathering the Empty Nest on Instagram. There's some underscores in between those words. And then my website blog is featheringtheemptynest.co.uk. And the book is Ask Me His Name, available in all good bookshops and on Amazon. Sorry.
You nailed it.
So I'm on Instagram as Jenny Monologues, and it's Jenny with an IE. And my blog is www.uterusmonologues.com.
Oh, you both did that bit really well. Well done, girls. And going back to the name of the podcast, which is Honestly, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, what would you say? It could be a troll, a celeb, a friend, a younger version of yourself. Anyone. Who would it be, and what would you say?
I would go for a younger version of myself. I would go for pre-married me and just, have that kind of, you're going to be all right chat.
You got this.
Yeah, I think that's where I would go as well. 20-something, don't worry about what other people think of you so much.
And then I always am really aware that you guys have been really honest and I haven't. So I always just like to do a little tidbit of honesty. And I don't know what inspired me to do this, but yesterday I was Googling how often you should change your bed sheets. And according to Good Housekeeping, which is the Bible on these things, they say every week. And I'll be honest, I do not change our bedding every week. I'd like 3 weeks. Where are you at with that, girls?
I'm every week.
Oh, I knew you would be.
Comes back to control freak.
I knew you would be.
I think I am just my mother's daughter.
Do you do it like on a Sunday? Or
I am my mother's daughter. I normally do it on a Friday, like ready for like fresh sheets.
I mean,
Elle,
you're winning at that.
I think probably every couple of weeks.
Yeah, couples kind of a... Okay, well,
interesting.
I think...
Googling.
I think, yeah, exactly. Well, I think we're going to try and be a bit more Elle. I mean, here's the Friday night sheet changing. I like a system, so
that's
I can get on board.
My life is.
Well, there you go. What a way to end this. I've been Clemmie Tailford, and these excellent women have been Elle and Jenny. And this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much. Thank you to M&S, our sponsor for Series 2 of Honestly, who kindly donated this episode to Tommy's. If you have felt touched by my conversations with Elle and Jenny, or by the work that Tommy's do, then please do head to www.tommy's.org for more information. You can join their closed Facebook group for peer-to-peer support if you've suffered loss, and share your stories through the Together for Change hashtag. The more we talk about loss, the more we can break down the stigma surrounding it. Oh, and one final thought. I'm always looking for inspiration for new subjects. So if you've got any topics that you'd like me to cover that I haven't done already, please do send your suggestions my way. You can either leave a comment below on iTunes or hop over to Instagram and send me a DM, and I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much.